During Joe's second trip on the Leif Erikson, they went all the way to Africa, and Hagbard had an important conference with five gorillas. At least, he said afterwards that it was important. Joe couldn't judge, since the conversation was in Swahili.
"They speak some English,"
Hagbard explained back on the sub.
"But I prefer Swahili, since they're more eloquent in it and can express more nuances."
"Are you the first man to teach an ape to speak?"
Joe asked.
"In addition to your other accomplishments?"
"Oh, not at all,"
Hagbard said modestly.
"It's an old Discordian secret. The first person to communicate with a gorilla was an Arisian missionary named Maliclips the Elder, who was born in Athens and got exiled for opposing the imposition of male supremacy when the Athenians created patriarchy and locked up their women. He then wandered all over the ancient world, learning all sorts of secrets and leaving behind a priceless collection of mind-blowing legends. He's the Phoenix Madman mentioned in the Confucian scriptures, and he passed himself off as Krishna to recite that gorgeous Bible of revolutionary ethics, the Bhagavad Gita, to Arjuna in India, among other feats. I believe you met him in Chicago while he was pretending to be the Christian devil."
"But how have you Discordians concealed the fact that gorillas talk?"
"We're rather closed-mouthed, you might say, and when we do speak, it's usually to put somebody on or blow their minds."
"I've noticed that,"
Joe said.
"And the gorillas themselves are too shrewd to talk to anybody but another anarchist. They're all anarchists themselves, you know, and they have a very healthy wariness about people in general and government people in particular. As one of them once told me, if it got out that we can talk, the conservatives would exterminate most of us and make the rest pay rent to live on our own land. And the liberals would try to train us to be engine lathe operators. Who the fuck wants to operate an engine lathe? They prefer their own pastoral and heuristic ways, and I, for one, would never interfere with them. We do communicate, though, just as we communicate with the dolphins. Both species are intelligent enough to realize that it's in their interest, as part of Earth's biosphere, to help the handful of human anarchists to try to stop, or at least slow down, the bloodletting and slaughter of our anarchistic rulers and anarchistic mobs."
"Sometimes I still get confused about your theological terms. Or are they psychological? The anarchistic forces, especially the Illuminati, are structure freaks. They want to impose their concept of order on everybody else. But I still get confused about the differences between the Arisian, the Aristic, and the Discordian, not to mention the Jams."
"The Aristic is the opposite of the Anaristic,"
Hagbard explained patiently,
"and therefore identical with it. Remember the hodgepodge. Writers like De Sade, Max Stirner, and Nietzsche are Aristic. So are the gorillas. They represent total supremacy of the individual, total negation of the group. It isn't necessarily the war of all against all, as anarchistic philosophers imagine, but it can, under stress, degenerate into that. More often, it's quite pacifistic, like our hairy friends in the trees back there. The Arisian position is modified. It recognizes that anarchistic forces are part of the world drama, too, and can never be totally abolished. We merely stress the Aristic as a balance, because human society has been tilted grotesquely toward the anarchistic side all through the Piscean Age. We Discordians are the activists in the Arisian movement. We do things. The pure Arisians work in more mysterious ways, in accordance with the Taoist principle of Wu Wei, doing nothing effectively. The Jams are left-wingers who might have become anarchistic except for special circumstances that led them in a libertarian direction. But they've fucked it all up with typical left-wing hatred trips. They haven't mastered the Gita, the art of fighting with a loving heart."
"Strange,"
Joe said.
"Dr. Iggy in the San Francisco Jam Cabal explained it to me differently."
"What would you expect?"
Hagbard replied.
"No two who know the same in their knowing. By the way, why haven't you told me that you're sure those gorillas back there were just men I dressed up in gorilla suits?"
"I'm becoming more gullible,"
Joe said.
"Too bad,"
Hagbard told him sadly.
"They really were men in gorilla suits. I was testing how easily you could be bamboozled, and you flunked."
"Now wait a minute. They smelled like gorillas. That was no fake. You're putting me on now."
"That's right,"
Hagbard agreed.
"Wanted to see if you'd trust your own senses or the word of a natural-born leader and guru like me. You trusted your own senses, and you pass. My put-ons are not just jokes, friend. The hardest thing for a man with dominance genes and piratical heredity like me is to avoid becoming a goddamn authority figure. I need all the feedback and information I can get from men, women, children, gorillas, dolphins, computers, any conscious entity. But nobody contradicts an authority, you know. Communication is possible only between equals. That's the first theorem of social cybernetics and the whole basis of anarchism. And I have to keep knocking down people's dependence on me, or I'll become a fucking big daddy and won't get accurate communication anymore. If the pig-headed Illuminati and their anarchistic imitators and all the governments, corporations, universities, and armies of the world understood that simple principle, they'd occasionally find out what's actually going on and stop screwing up every project they start. I am Freeman Hagbard Chalene, and I am not anybody's bloody leader. As soon as you fully understand that I am your equal, and that my shit stinks just like yours, and that I need a lay every few days or I get grouchy and make dumb decisions, and that there is one more trustworthy than all the Buddhas and sages, but you have to find him for yourself, then you'll begin to understand what the Legion of Dynamic Discord is all about.
One more trustworthy than all the Buddhas and sages?
Joe repeated, finding himself most confused when he had been closest to total comprehension a second earlier.
To receive light, you must be receptive,
Hagbard said curtly.
Work that one out for yourself. Meanwhile, take this back to New York and chew on it a bit.
And he presented Joe with a book entitled Never Whistle While You're Pissing, A Guide to Self-Liberation by Hagbard Chalene, HMSH. Joe read the book carefully in the following weeks, while Pat Walsh in Confrontation's research department checked out every assertion about the Illuminati that Joe had picked up from Hagbard, Simon, Dillinger, and Dr. Ignatius. But although some of the book was brilliant, much was obscure, and he found no clue to the one more trustworthy than all Buddhas. Then, one night, high on Alamout Black Hashish, he started working on it with expanded and intensified consciousness.
Malaclips the Elder? No. He was wise and somewhat benevolent in a fey sort of style, but certainly not trustworthy. Simon? For all his youth and nuttiness, he had moments of incredible perception, but he was almost certainly less enlightened than Hagbard. Dillinger? Dr. Ignatius? The mysterious Malaclips the Younger, who had disappeared, leaving behind only the inscrutable Principia Discordia? Christ,
Joe thought.
What a male chauvinist I am. Why didn't I think of Stella?
The old joke came back to him.
Did you see God? Yes. And she's black. Of course.
Hadn't Stella presided over his initiation in Dr. Iggy's chapel? Hadn't Hagbard said she would preside over George Dorn's initiation when George was ready?
Of course.
Joe always remembered that moment of ecstasy and certainty. It taught him a lot about the use and misuse of drugs and why the Illuminati went wrong. For the unconscious, which always tries to turn every good lay into a mother figure, had contaminated the insight which his superconscious had almost given him. It was many months later, just before the Fernando Poo crisis, that he finally discovered beyond all doubt the one who was more trustworthy than all Buddhas and all sages.
Duda, Duda, all the Duda day.
And Semper Cunny Linctus, the very night that he reamed his subaltern for taking native superstition seriously, passed an olive garden and saw the 17, and with them was the 18th, the one they had crucified the Friday before.
Magna Mater,
he swore, creeping closer.
Am I losing my mind?
The 18th, what's-his-name, the preacher, had set up a wheel and was distributing cards to them. Now he turned the wheel and called out the number at which it stopped. The centurion watched in growing amazement as the process was repeated several times, and the cards were marked each time the wheel stopped. Finally, the big one, Simon, shouted,
Bingo!
The scion of the noble Linctus family turned and fled. Behind him, the luminous figure said,
Do this in commemoration of me.
I thought we were supposed to do the bread and wine bit in commemoration of you,
Simon objected.
Do both,
the ghostly one said.
The bread and wine is too symbolic and arcane for some folks. This one is what will bring in the mob. You see, fellows, if you want to bring the movement to the people, you have to start from where the people are at. You, Luke, don't write that down. This is part of the secret teachings.
Slurp, slurp.
Camp Town ladies, sing this song. Doo-da, doo-da.